podcast you're about to hear is a very special podcast. Opening day 2024, recapping that, and a very special guest for the second time on this podcast, going over all things NBA, but mostly Knicks. This one's a good one. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this one. It's the Grind Hours Podcast, and it's coming in your ear. Telling you all of the news that you need to hear. Baseball talk and football talk, and NBA as well. Joe has got the highlights, and it's just like show and tell. Joe and all his radio friends, make sure the updates never end. Breaking news and analysis, tennis shoes and hockey sticks. Grind Hours Podcast, and it's streaming on your phone. Sports talk's never been so good, so listen and you're home. Hey. Hello and welcome to the Grind Hours Podcast for Friday, March 29th, 2024. Recording this just after 12:30 Eastern time on Long Island. And before we get to the special guest and the basketball talk for Basketball Fridays, I got to speak on opening day yesterday. And wow, with Juan Soto. He is, and I get it. I don't want to be Mr. Blowout of Proportion opening day, one game sample size guy. But just allow me for a minute to gush over Juan Soto. Because if you follow me on Twitter, all spring training, I was in full bloom love with this guy. I really was. Watching him and his process in the very first spring training game to the last game that he played, I just couldn't wait until the games counted, and what a first impression he made. Now, he didn't hit a homer. He had a ribby base hit as his first hit as a Yankee. He had a couple of walks and was his trademark great eye at the plate. But it's the defense and the game-saving play that he made in the bottom of the ninth, that I think will resonate with Yankee fans for as long as he's a Yankee, because we knew the type of hitter we were getting. We didn't think we were getting this in the field. And now his range is limited. All right. He's not going to do this every single game. With the glove, he's so-so. His arm's okay. He had 11 outfield assists last year, which was, I believe, seventh most in either baseball or the National League. So he's got an arm, but I didn't know that it was this good. And it's plays like that, that if you look at Judge after the fact and, you know, the little tongue-in-cheek pointing to the left arm of Soto that they did after the play and then after the final out, I mean, it was a celebration in terms of Judge was, it's the happiest I've seen him in a very, very long time in a Yankee uniform. And it seems infectious. This doesn't seem like it's just a one game thing. This, in terms of the Soto impact, seems like a long term thing. And even the way that they won yesterday, and again, it's one game, it's opening day. There's a lot of emotions, and people treat opening day like it's, you know, week one of the NFL season and completely blow it out of proportion. But one thing that you cannot oversell or overhype is the way in which they won that game yesterday. Nestor didn't have his A stuff. I don't even think he had his B stuff. He barely got through five with his C minus to D plus stuff. And the way that they battled back, they had base runners galore yesterday off Framber Valdez. Now, Valdez wasn't great, but he got out of three jams in four innings. The Yankees hit into three double plays in four innings, and in back-to-back innings, bases loaded, double plays. So they had the opportunities, and if you keep giving this team these opportunities, and again, I feel like I have to keep saying this, it's opening day, all right? But if they continue this for the long haul, and it's not something that can be quantified by a hot and cold streak, they're just getting on base. They're walking. Verdugo with the sac fly to take the lead. Yes, you need the timely home run, which Oswaldo Cabrera gave you. And if you listen to me, I wouldn't have even started Cabrera yesterday. I would have put Nick Birdie in the leadoff spot. But this, to me, seems sustainable. And we finally have a lineup that is reminiscent of the teams that won. I'm not even saying the 90s. These are it, and Michael Kay penned a piece before the, and I know he announced it, but he wrote it. It was the intro to the beginning of the game. And he was talking about the timeless formula to win. Well, yes, lefty power hitters is the Yankees' timeless formula to win, but it also allows the lineup to flow seamlessly. And there really is, unless you go down to the 9 spot, and even Trevino, all right, the 8-9 spots in any lineup are not that great. But this lineup, now 1-7, is a tough fight for any pitcher on any given day. And Soto seeing 12 pitches yesterday, Volpe seeing 12 pitches yesterday in an at-bat allows the lineup to get a better look at the starter or whoever's on the mound. I didn't know that Soto was going to impact the lineup the way he did by not even being on base, not even being in the batter's box. That's something that I forgot about because it's been so long since I've seen a Yankee team work a pitcher like this. And again, that's not something that's just hyperbolic, one game, blow out of proportion nonsense. Being able to walk and cram the bases and have traffic and be able to, even if the bullpens are better than they were in the 90s, but even to get into the bullpen, that affects the later games in the series. That, if you're playing division games, hurts your divisional opponents later on in the week when they're not playing you. So this is now a lineup that I think can compete with anybody in baseball and is probably, in terms of on-base percentage, probably going to lead the league. Probably going to lead the league. That's the impact of Soto. That will not show up in the box score, will not show up on the back of his baseball card, but we'll get him extra dollars in the offseason when it's time to extend him. God, I really hope they extend him. All right, I've spent almost 8 minutes on the Yankees. There's other things about opening day that I want to touch on quickly. Corbin Burnes, it's one game, but an ace stopper is what the Orioles were missing last year. If they get 80% of the offensive production from the lineup that they got last year and they get Cy Young Corbin Burnes, they're still going to be at the top of this division. They will still challenge 100 wins. They will look at times like an unbeatable freight train that'll just roll into your town, steamroll you, and leave. They're that good. I am, as a Yankee fan, more scared of them than any team in the division. I think they will take the mantle of the Rays, even though the Rays are always a thorn in the side and that we have a brief history recently. I think that will change starting this year. I don't think it'll be Yankee Stadium South anymore this year. I think there will be a Baltimore home crowd, and it will be a little bit different than it was in years past, and that sort of rivalry will rekindle itself. And I'm not saying turn for the bad, but in terms of level on the play, or level, the level of play on the field, excuse me, will be some of the best divisional baseball you'll watch all year. I cannot wait for the first Yankees-Orioles game just because it's two of the best five teams in baseball. Thirdly, we got to talk about umpiring because, and I don't want to take this as gospel, but if you look at umpire scorecards on Twitter and now on Instagram, every single team that won, the umpire favored the winning team. Now, I don't want to read too much into that. If you look at some of the plus minus in terms of runs, it was only minuscule, but we're talking about baseball here. Minuscule wins. That is a little bit concerning. There's been a couple of, and again, first game, it's opening day for everybody. The umpires aren't going to be great. But there's one call in particular, and this went viral last night in the Rangers-Cubs game. By the way, get well soon, Justin Steele. But I believe it was in the seventh or eighth inning. Forget who was at the dish, but they fouled a ball off and the home plate umpire called it a wild pitch. There needs to be some sort of governing force that can essentially blow the play dead and say, no. That's not a run. Put the runner back at third base. This isn't a tie game. It was a foul ball. And go from there. That can't stand. There's a reason why replay was instituted. I get it was to get the obvious calls right and the so-so calls correct. There's also instances of Amando Galarraga, of that play last night in Arlington. The Rangers, ball don't lie, they won the game. But if they lose that game, it's a way bigger deal. Now it's just, that's the reason why I'm bringing it up. Because they won. It will be forgotten by Easter Sunday. Forgotten. Didn't even happen. No, it happened. That can't happen. That's a massive play in that game. Probably the turning point of that game. That cannot happen. I get it. It's loud in the sold out crowd at Globe Life Field or whatever it's called. The umpire didn't hear the crack of the bat on the foul tip. I get it. But you're telling me the second base umpire didn't see it? You're telling me that the first base umpire didn't see that? Third base umpire, I get it was a right-handed batter. But two out of the four umpires had to see that the ball changed direction and it wasn't a pass ball. The replay center should be able to call down to the field of play and say, hold on, wait a second. We got an issue here. I keep coming back to this because I think it's the best form of replay that we have, or aspect of replay that we have. It's in the NHL with hockey. They have a official up in a booth that if anything goes awry, they can just blow it dead and call the replay center and get it fixed. Well, Major League Baseball needs that. For instances like this, I get it, they're one in a million. But those one in a million situations could change team seasons. Next up on the list is the Dodgers. Full disclosure, and I have a new piece out on my blog. Didn't pick the Dodgers to win the World Series or even go to the damn World Series. But I think a lot of people are underselling the Dodgers. That top of the lineup, that 1-2-3, Betts, Freeman, Ohtani. That's murderer's row type stuff. That is once in a generation type stuff. I don't think we will see a top three in a lineup better than that for the next X amount of years. And it's decades amount of years. That's going to be special. That alone, I picked them. I didn't pick them to win 100 games. I forget how many games I picked them to win. It was a lot. It was in the 90s. I think they will have the best record in the game this year. Didn't pick them to win 100 games. That top three alone might get them to 100 wins. It was fantastic yesterday afternoon. Now, the whole introduction stuff, I don't like that. I didn't like the Mets with the smoke on the dugout. I'm not going to like the dance team that they're going to have today with the introductions and probably cheerleaders type style with a football game and a high school type of stuff. That's probably what's going to happen. But this team with a bullseye on its back, I'm just waiting for somebody in that locker room to say, oh, you want to put a bullseye on us? Game on. We'll ride the bull like no one's ever rid it before. If they take that type of attitude and embrace the villain role, look out. Because those guys with a chip on their shoulder, and Glasnow pitched beautifully yesterday. I get it's the St. Louis Cardinals. This isn't your granddad's St. Louis Cardinals. But he pitched beautifully, and he's the third guy when they're right. He'll be the fourth guy next year when Ohtani comes back and pitches. Maybe. But they get Walker Buehler back. Evan Phillips, if he takes the step as the closer. I get the bridge from the starters to the back end of the bullpen's rickety, but when you get Buehler back and then Kershaw eventually too, probably in May, that's going to be tough. That's going to be fun to watch on a nightly basis. I'm going to feel bad. I feel bad now for people in the NL West and fans of those teams because, you know, Glasnow, Yamamoto, and Buehler walking into town. How many wins do you think you're going to get? Not many. They're not going to lose many games. Lastly, and it got postponed yesterday, but I will have my eyes glued to Braves-Phillies. I love both these teams. I think both these teams will be two of the challengers to the Dodgers. I don't think either of them are afraid. I'm looking forward to a full season of Bryce Harper at first base. I'm looking forward to see how the Braves encore last year, what Acuna has in store, if Strider can continue this pace of striking out people. I will have my eyes glued to the TV for that one. That's must-see TV. And I know locally the Mets Brewers will be on MLB Network. That one should be on MLB Network for everyone to see because that is marquee. Marquee. All right. After the break, we'll switch things up. We got to talk NBA. We got to talk Lakers. We got to talk maybe a little of my Nets. They stink, but they're still a little noteworthy. And a whole lot of Knicks. So Knicks fans, buckle up. We'll get to that right after the break.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
SeatGeek is the number one ticket app for buying and selling tickets. Sports fans, music fans, comedy fans, theater fans, fans of tickets. Use my code GRINDHOUR to get into the building to get yourself a seat. Again, that's code GRINDHOUR at checkout for $20 off your first purchase at SeatGeek.com or the SeatGeek app. One more time, code GRINDHOUR. That's GRINDHOUR at checkout. Joining me now, for first time in a long time, but getting down to the nitty-gritty of the NBA season, I got to get my guy Ty Butler of various different outlets. I know him from 98.7, you probably know him from 98.7, but Ty, you're all over the place now, man. I can't keep track of you. You're on SNY, you're on, I've seen you on a couple of Jet podcasts that I frequent because I'm a Jet Twitter follower like you are. So you're all over the place, man. How you been?
I've been great, man. I guess the better question is, how have you been? Because I guess 3 years ago around this time, we would have been on this podcast talking about how your favorite basketball team was in pursuit of a championship, and now they're more in pursuit of a lottery pick, which they don't even own. So you guys are in a bit of a fray, but good to be on your show, man. What's up?
I'm doing well. I'm not doing well in terms of my basketball team. I've punted on them now, it seems like 3 months ago. I haven't really worked. Everybody that I talk to that's a Net fan, which is very few and far between, they're hoping for the play-in tournament.
That's not going to happen.
I gave up on that a long time ago, about a week or two after they fired Jock Vaughn and they got Dennis Schroeder, and nothing changed. So I was like, all right, this is a lost season. They don't care. There's something that's not clicking with that team, and I can't continue to drive myself nuts about it.
Yeah, they don't have a good roster, and they were kind of done in by the Ben Simmons fiasco, because that trade is like honestly one of the worst I've seen in recent NBA history.
It's a gift that keeps on giving.
And it's funny how we see all of these like preseason Ben Simmons, you know, workout videos and shooting drills, and then everyone kind of tricks themselves into thinking, wait, if he's healthy and, you know, he can hit a jump shot, then maybe, just maybe. No, it's been
not
what,
this
like
guy.
Four years now since I've actually seen him on the court consistently. That's legit one of the worst trades I've ever seen. And this is an organization that doesn't seem to have an allergy to like historically bad trades, but this one is going to rank right up there. So I feel for the Net fans, man, because like the Pierce Garnett Jason Terry thing, yeah, sure, like there was not really, you know, too much to be excited about as far as the longevity of it, but you felt like at least in real time for one season, you get one crack at the can. They had swept the Miami Heat during the season, and of course lost to them in the playoffs. And then the whole Kevin Durant, Kyrie thing, yeah, that was more longevity because, you know, Durant was nursing an injury, but it just never materialized. And then, you know what the worst part of the season is? If you watch Dallas Maverick games, and Kyrie's having an awesome year, but it's not even just that. Like, he had the hook shot to beat Jokic. Not a peep from him. Like, he is the most model citizen. And you think, well, maybe it's because he's in the contract year. No, the contract year was last season.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the contract already, and now he's on his best behavior. So that would tick me off if I'm a Net fan.
I'm honestly shocked, real quick, on Kyrie. I'm shocked he's still in Dallas. I for sure thought he was headed to your team at the trade deadline.
No.
They've been flirting forever.
You mean
Kyrie and the Lakers?
Nah, Mark Cuban
was
going to.
No. This year's trade deadline. I'm shocked when he signed that contract in the summer. It wasn't a preamble to join the Lakers in February.
Mark Cuban was never going to do that. No.
He's not in charge anymore.
But he's still running the team. He's still running. He still is in charge. Well, yeah, he's still in charge of basketball operations. He sold the team, but he's still in charge of basketball operations. There was no way he was going to make the trade he did for Kyrie Irving and then just sign him and then trade. Like, that didn't make any sense.
I don't know. I thought the D'Angelo Russell Kyrie thing was just a match made in heaven, and LeBron was going to get his long lost tag teammate back. But going on your team really quickly, they confuse the hell out of me because they could beat anybody in the Western Conference. They could get back to the Western Conference Finals, as far as I'm concerned. But they can't really seem to string wins together. And at this point in the year, they're sitting in the ninth seed. They need to go on a winning streak, and they need to show not only the Laker fans, but the rest of the NBA public that they can actually get back there. They're talented enough, but they just they confuse the hell out of me. So as a Laker fan, get me straight on them.
Well, it's mystifying because, like, when you actually look at the team play, you think to yourself, well, they're – like, if you go roster to roster in the NBA, this is not ranking amongst, like, the bottom third as far as, like, you know, tiers in the league. Like, the Lakers roster is not bad. The Gabe Vincent injury, the Jared Vanderbilt injury are obviously huge, but they're still a team that's good enough. And then you look at LeBron and Anthony Davis are having, like, superb seasons. Now, LeBron's nursing an injury. AD's been relatively healthy. So it just feels like those things don't produce the result that you would expect. The roster's not bad, and the two best players have been healthy and really good. So what's going wrong? And I think that part of it is Darvin Ham, his coaching decisions this year have just left a lot of people confused. And Austin Reeves didn't have the start to the season that we expected based on what he produced last year. So, you know, D'Angelo Russell started the year poorly. He's turned it on. I think the Lakers in the last 23 games are actually 16-7. So to your point, like, it's an odd thing in that you look at them and you say they can beat anyone in the West outside of Denver, but they can also lose to anyone just because they don't feel like a team that is consistent enough to sustain excellence over 2 weeks. But I think that if they match up in the first round of Denver, they're going home in round one. If they can avoid them until the Western Conference Finals, then I think the sky's the limit because I just don't think that the West has teams that are unbeatable outside of the Nuggets.
Not yet. There will be. I think Oklahoma City next year and moving forward will be one of those teams, but I don't think they're ready yet. The Warriors, to me, a lot of people are grouping the Lakers and the Warriors together.
No, the Warriors stink.
I sniffed this out 2 weeks ago. They don't have a gear, especially now that Draymond has just kicked that season into the garbage can and not really cared about it. He's going to be on your team. I'll make a proclamation now. He's going to be a Laker next season.
No, it's not going to happen. But the Warriors, like, people, I heard someone say this yesterday. Like, would you be surprised if they knocked off, like, the Wolves or the Thunder? And yes. I'm like, yes, I would be surprised. Because we're now looking at the Warriors through the lens of the dynasty. And this is not the same team. Klay Thompson, you know, I don't want to crush Klay because, like, he actually is someone you feel badly for. You feel badly for him because he's trying his hardest. You know, he's got the passion. He's working his ass off. Like, he's not a guy who's cutting corners. It's just his body has betrayed him. Like, he went from being one of the best two-way players in basketball to just he's coming off the bench, and, like, sometimes he'll have big games, and then other times it's like, oh, he shot 5 for 15 and played 21 minutes. So I feel badly for him. But, like, who's their second-best player? Is it Draymond? Well, he can't sustain himself psychologically. He's just, like, off his rocker. Or is it Jonathan Kuminga, who's, what, 21 years old? Steph's having an awesome season, not just for a 35-year-old. Just, you know, he's still one of the top 10 players of basketball. It's just that he doesn't have that second guy he can rely on every single night. And if it's Kuminga, I think Kuminga's becoming a really good player. He's 21. So, like, age and sometimes kind of works against the belief that we have in you when we haven't seen it in big moments. But the Warriors are cooked, man. They're done. And Draymond is just, I mean, to have what transpired in that Magic game is such an embarrassment. It's such a disgrace. and it reeks of a selfish player.
That's the straw that broke the camel back. He's gone. He's gone in the summer. I don't know where he's going.
But the problem with Draymond is that he doesn't get it. He shows up on his podcast yesterday and he says, like, things aren't ever as good as they are or as they seem or as bad as they seem. After the game, when Steph hits the dagger and he's doing this little, put him to sleep gesture, Draymond's waiting for him in the tunnel, doing the same thing, smiling. Like, dude, you just don't get it. You do not understand it. To watch Steph show the emotion he did when Draymond got ejected and to then follow it up by, like, laughing and giggling about it, Draymond just doesn't get it.
I don't know what to do with Draymond because, yes, he has a history with this team and he's part of the reason why they were as great as they are, and he's part of the reason why they've missed out on multiple championships. Multiple. So I just think that situation is now going to dissolve and he's going to be the odd man out. Everybody thought it was going to be Clay.
No, I don't know that he's going to be the odd man out because they just gave him a $100 million extension. They're done with
Steve Kerr said he deserved to get kicked out. His coach, who's defended him and put up all those actions for years.
No, but don't misconstrue what I'm saying. They just signed him to an $100 million extension. Tell me the team in the NBA that now looks at Draymond Green after this season. Well, first of all, not last season, he sent down the drain because he started the year by punching Jordan Poole in the face, didn't get suspended. This season, he
didn't
missed
really apologize either.
Didn't apologize. He missed a quarter of this season because of multiple suspensions. And now there's a team out there fresh off of him signing a $100 million extension that says, yeah, that's the missing piece. Absolutely not. So, like, the Warriors can want to trade him. I just don't see a partner. Like, who's the team that wants to get in bed with Draymond Green?
Somebody will go, we have the infrastructure to fix him. Somebody will.
But I don't understand what the fixing is, because physically, he's aging.
You know
and
what I just thought of?
Psychologically, he's, like, coming, he's, like, off the rails. So, and then a lot of people have argued, like, his true value, like, the apex of his value is only realized in Golden State when you have the Splash Brothers. So, like, I don't know that he goes to another team outside of that system and can turn back the clock, what, 5 years ago? I just don't see it.
I agree with you on that, but you know what I just thought of? Pool for Draymond, straight up, who says no? They get traded for each other. Who says no?
Yeah, that would be a first of all, that contract, the Warriors have given out two bad contracts in the last 2 years, the Jordan Poole contract and the Draymond Green contract. And now Clay is up for his new deal. So, I mean, that there are big decisions to make because for Steph's still really good, man. So, like, does he want to end his career this way? Or do you want to put yourself in that, like, LeBron and Kate? And I get this is not the perfect example right now because the Suns don't look good and the Lakers are, what, the 9 seed right now. But the KD and LeBron are at least in position to contend for championships, like, with their teams. The Steph Curry is not. So, like, do you want to put yourself in that boat where you can get back to contending for titles? Or do you just want to exude loyalty and stay with this franchise that right now doesn't look like they're in that position to contend for a championship?
He'll stay with that roster. They have a lot of decisions to make. I think the roster is going to look completely different than it does this year. And they owe it to Steph. Because Joe Lacob...
They have two undesirable contracts. The Wiggins deal looks a mess. And Draymond, like, that looks like a bad contract right now.
I get it. And they're going to have to make a decision on Clay and either sign and trade him or give him the Draymond Green treatment, which I think they should have given him over Draymond. But Joe Lacob said they want to compete for decades. Well, if you want to do that, you owe it to your star to continue to do that. But speaking of competing for a championship, the reason why I have you on this podcast is to talk Knicks, because you and I, as two non Knicks fans living in New York City, having to deal with Knicks mania right now. For me, I just don't think they can get healthy and realize whatever version of this team was in January when it comes time for playoffs. Am I crazy, or am I just not believing that they can drink some magic potion and get healthy for the playoffs?
So whenever, and I'll cross sports for a moment, whenever we talk about the Yankees, it always kind of lends itself to like creating a list of, if this person stays healthy, then they can win. And then all of a sudden you look at the list and it's like, wait, we're talking about like 8 or 9 guys. Like, what are the odds that 8 or 9 guys who are older stay healthy? The Knicks, it's not 8 or 9 guys, but it's 2 of your best 3. You know, OG Anunoby, remember, like, the injury was first just elbow soreness, and then he had to have surgery, then he was going to come back and be great, and then he went out again. So that gives me some pause. Then you got Julius Randle. Like, a month ago, we saw him doing workout drills. Has he played in the game since then? No, he hasn't. So I'm starting to wonder, like, are we actually going to see Randle this season? And if we are, how compromised is he going to be physically, and how does that disrupt their chance of upsetting Milwaukee or Boston in the playoffs? I think the Bucks are going to win the Eastern Conference. I know that's kind of a hot take because the Celtics are on a historic pace right now, but I happen to think the Bucks are going to win the conference. Regardless of whether people will agree or disagree with me, like, what you really can't argue is that in round 2 or one side of the bracket, you're going to get Boston, or you're going to get Milwaukee. So can the Knicks beat those two teams? I don't think they have any shot of beating Boston. And I give them very little shot of beating the Bucks if they're not healthy. So I just struggle with, Randle's going to miss half the season, come back from this shoulder injury, be 100% healthy, and also, you know, put to pass those playoff demons. Like, I just can't see all those things happening. I think the Knicks are really good. It's just, they got bit by the injury bug. And I don't even know if they were healthy, they would beat Milwaukee or Boston. So now throwing injury questions, I just don't see it happening.
If they were 100% healthy, if both those injuries didn't happen, I give them both, against Milwaukee and Boston, a fair shot. I'm not saying they win both those series, but
it,
I think
both
those series, to me, go the distance, because both Milwaukee and Boston have weaknesses on the defensive end that I think the Knicks could hunt in terms of matchups. But
no, Boston doesn't have a defensive weakness. When their starting lineup is going to close the game, and they've got the best defensive backcourt in the league.
I don't trust Jaylen Brown. Sorry. On both ends of the floor in the playoffs, I don't trust Jaylen Brown.
But Jaylen Brown's really good defense. I don't think the Celtics, I don't think their issue is defense. They're one of the best defense in basketball. I think my trepidation about Boston is end of game situations.
Yes.
Identity. And look, it's, people have argued about this for years. Like, does it necessarily lend itself that your best player has to always take the shot? No, I don't think that your best player always has to take the shot. But it does feel a little like the KD Westbrook thing, where it was your turn, my turn, your turn, my turn. And the synergy and the identity isn't there with Boston. For me, like, they've proven during the regular season they can win blowouts. They've also proven that in late game situations, Tatum's not very good.
Yeah.
I just think that for Boston, what was that game they lost the other day? That they were up 30. The Hawks game, yeah. They were up 30 and then lost that game. Crunch time, it's just bad shot after bad shot. So that's what I'm interested to see with Boston. Milwaukee, their defense has gotten better since Doc has arrived.
But
I
Dame,
just think that
late game playoff Dame, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, it's Dame, it's Giannis, and then there's Middleton. It's like, pick your poison. Giannis struggles from the free throw line, so I think in big moments he wants to give the ball to Middleton and Dame. And Middleton, you know this, is clutch as they come. You saw that game 7 against their team.
Yep.
Like, that dude is like MJ in crunch time. So that's why I favor those two teams over everyone else.
Middleton a little bit. Look, I give him respect. But he's kind of milking the Kyrie sort of thing, too. That was a while ago at this point. He hasn't been healthy for a long time.
Yeah, and that's the biggest question with him. But he's still clutch. Like, he still hits big shots. And he had a triple-double the other day. Then when he's on the floor, he's really good. It's just, he's always nicked up. Ankle, knee. Like, there's always something going on with him. But if they're healthy, I like them over Boston.
So with the Knicks, given this state, even if Randle comes back and he's 60%, the guy that I don't think is going to come back is OG, because Randle will play through pain. We know that. OG doesn't really seem like he's the type of guy, if he's limited, that he's going to give it a go.
Yeah.
How far can they go? We'll say they get back Randle, he's 60%.
I don't know that 60% Randle is good enough. Like, the playoffs, when you're facing the same team 7 times over the course of 2 weeks, they're going to figure you out. The Knicks have been blowing out. This is not to throw shade at them. They've been blowing out a lot of bad teams. And that's actually something that I admire, because they're understanding that, you know, we are not champions. We can't take anyone lightly. We have to show up every game like it's game 7. Now, that can hurt you in the long run, because guys are gassed, and, you know, Thibodeau gets his players to play at such a level of urgency that maybe there's no next gear in the playoffs. So we'll see about that. I just don't think 60% of Randle is good enough, because 100% of Randle wasn't good enough in the Hawks series, wasn't good enough in the Miami series last year. So those are still questions that, while injuries have kind of taken the forefront of like what we're thinking about come playoff time, that the playoff failures and struggles, that's still a real thing that he has to overcome until we're fully on board with thinking that this guy can, you know, help them get to their goal in the postseason.
The thing with me is, we're going to see what the Lakers did to Brunson, and I don't think another team has really copycatted what the Lakers were able to do in that game. What was that, January?
Yeah, the difference, I would say, because not a lot of teams have LeBron and AD, right? Like, AD is the ultimate rim protector, so they're doing a lot of trapping, forcing the ball out of his hands and getting other guys to shoot. If I'm not mistaken, I don't know if DiVincenzo played that game, but like, if you get DiVincenzo and OG Anunoby and like shooters around Jalen, it's not going to necessarily work to the same efficacy that it did in that Laker game. And then Anthony Davis playing the roamer, he can protect the rim. But yeah, like, other teams will try to exercise that. It's just going to be on the Knicks to hit open threes. And if DiVincenzo can hit 11 in a game, then sure, give them, you know, give them a shot to win it. But they're going to have to make shots.
I just don't think they have enough offense. They have the defense, especially in a playoff series when everything slows down. They have the half-court defense. But I don't know. DiVincenzo hasn't been asked to do that in his career. Josh Hart, when asked to do that last year, that's not really his game. Don't talk to me about Deuce McBride yet. He's just figuring out the type of player that he potentially could be right now. So don't even talk to me about him in the playoffs. The center position, whether it's Hartenstein or Mitchell Robinson, they're not really – Hartenstein's pretty good offensively. But he hasn't been asked to do this in the playoffs yet. So Brunson's really the only guy healthy now, because – I agree with you. Randle, who knows? He will have a game if he plays. He will have a game. OG, again, I just don't think he's that type of guy. Yes, he has been battle-tested, and he's won a ring. He was the fourth best player, maybe third best player, on a championship team that beat the Warriors of all teams. But I think this is a lot to ask. For me to even get to the Eastern Conference Finals, if you're the Knicks.
Yeah. So I agree with you. There's this like sentiment going around, and it's very interesting. And it's like, well, we've all kind of lost the plot. We've all been so involved in, like, you know, the Knicks need that superstar. Do they already have the superstar, and they just need another guy alongside Jalen Brunson? And look, Brunson's having an impeccable season. He is like one of the best free agent signings in New York sports history. He has clearly, you know, outperformed the expectations. And he's due for an extension this coming summer, which you will see if he wants to take it this year or next year. Still don't think he could be the best player on a championship team. Because
– Really?
Because – so let's just look at what history tells us. what, 77 years, right, of NBA history has told us what? A guy that size being the best player on your team, if he's not Isaiah Thomas or Steph Curry, it's not happening. So unless you think Jalen Brunson is in the conversation with Zeke and Steph, then you don't actually believe he can be, at that size, the best player on a championship team. Now we can extend this further. Title teams and their best players. So the 04 Pistons, right? Like, you know, Ben Wallace, Chauncey Billups. We don't consider them all-time great players. Jack Sigma with the 79 Bucks. I guess you can go to – there's one more I'm forgetting. But those are the two teams that jump out to me. Throughout history, it's like, all right, who's the best player on the championship teams? It's a lot of, you know, Kareem and Moses and Larry and Magic and Jordan and Olajuwon and Shaq and Duncan and Kobe and Wade and Dirk, LeBron, it's Steph, it's KD, it's Kawhi. It's like some of the best players we've ever seen. And then we've added Jokic and Giannis to that equation. So if you think Brunson is in the conversation with those guys, then maybe we can have a discussion. But to the Zeke Steph point, and to the point about the best players on championship teams all throughout NBA history, if you don't think that he's in those conversations, then I don't actually think that you believe that he can be the best player on a championship team.
I think he could be the guy. I truly do. And this is no slight at Randle, because I'm the last guy that's going to throw shade at Julius Randle. I think he gets a lot of heat for no reason. I get the playoff. I get it. I get all that playoff demon stuff. I understand it. But he shows up. When he's healthy, he shows up and he performs. I don't know if Randle could be the co-star here. Partially because of the baggage that he has with the fans in the playoffs. Also partially because of the way that, if this team is going to realize championship aspirations, the way that they have to play. So,
all right. So that's fair.
A better co-star. Let me ask you this then.
So who's the co-star that comes to mind to you? Like, give me an example of that co-star.
I mean, Kawhi.
But Kawhi is
Kawhi, Paul George.
But he's better. Kawhi Leonard is a better player than Jalen Brunson. So that's not a co-star. That is Kawhi now coming to the team and being your best player. So what I'm asking you is, if we're replacing Randle with a second best player, give me one who exists in the NBA, who's worse than Jalen Brunson, who comes in here and helps them win a championship.
Probably, I mean, it's that ilk. It's PG. It's maybe.
And that's assuming we think Paul George better is worse than Jalen Brunson.
But I think right now, yes. In his career right now, yes.
But I still don't think anyone would now jump the Knicks into the championship conversation if they just traded Randle for Paul George.
No.
How do I know that? Because Paul George has failed to win a championship with Kawhi Leonard. So now you put him with Jalen Brunson, and now he's closer to one. So, again, you can't name the player because you don't actually think he can be the best player on a championship team. That's my point.
That's fair. Again, I do. The problem is, with this NBA now, it used to be the big three. Now it's the rule of two. You need two guys. And Boston's in an identity crisis now with this, too. And the West, I really like your Westbrook-KD comparison. But they need two guys. And again, no slight against Julius Randle. You won't find a guy that's going to back him in this city more than I will. But for the style of play, they need an upgrade from him. And I don't know. You're right. I don't know if it exists in this current NBA as we know it. Something could go awry this summer and shake some things up. And the Knicks could push all their chips in and land one of those big guys.
But they land a big guy, it's going to be someone who's better than Jalen Brunson. It's not. You're not
talent wise. Talent wise, sure. Maybe, yes. Quote unquote star power, sure. But it's going to be the Steph thing with KD. Whoever comes here, it's not going to be their team. It's going to be Brunson's team.
But that's semantics. What we're really talking about is just who's the best player on the team. It doesn't matter like whose team it is, like whatever. who is the best player on the team, and if the Knicks are to enter championship contention, the best player on the team is not going to be Jalen Brunson. It's not going to be. We just did the thought exercise. We're trying to add talent. Everyone's a free agent in the NBA. Tell me who the player they add to this team that makes them a championship contender, and that player has to be worse than Brunson. And we can't find the name of the guy.
That's a fair point. No, that's a fair point. But it will, again, it will be the Steph thing. And whether or not you agree with that, I don't want to have the conversation. But the KD thing with Steph, he was the best player on two championship teams. But it wasn't his team. It was Steph's team. He was the hired gun to make them unbeatable. They need that hired gun. And whether or not they can get that this summer, because I do think it's either this summer or next summer, or it's never going to happen. That's the championship window.
They got some big decisions to make because Harden signs up for a contract. You've got Randall at some point in the next 2 years due for an extension. Brunson's up for an extension. I think OG...
This summer.
This summer has got to get his contract redone as well. So those are, one, two, three, four guys, four of your best players who you have big decisions to be made. And this is after you paid Mitchell Robinson, who I think they're actually going to try to move to help, solidify Hartenstein coming back. Because Mitchell Robinson is just too much of an injury risk. I love his ceiling, but the guy can't stay on the floor.
They're better without him.
They're different without. I don't know that they're better without him. I just think that because he can't play a whole season, we kind of look at his value differently. And when Hartenstein comes in and he helps them as much as he's done offensively, not just scoring, but like his passing ability, those two things, once they get married, people start to say they're better. I don't think they're better without him. They're different, and he's just inconsistent when it comes to being available.
He's Rudy Gobert. Not as good defensively. He's not going to win a defensive player of the year, but he's Rudy Gobert. He will rebound. He will play defense.
That could change the series.
But what's the latest round that Rudy Gobert has ever played in?
Well, I mean, if Rudy's your best player. Yeah, but if he's your best player, sure. If Mitchell Robinson's coming as your fourth best player, then, I mean, it's not the Rudy Gobert situation when they're relying on him. I my point is just – like, he can be a series-altering player. It's just we haven't been able to see it. Maybe we saw it last year in that
Cleveland a little bit.
The Cleveland series where he just could shut down Mobley and Jared Allen. They just, got suffocated. But, Hartenstein is more polished offensively, and if they decided to have him be their starter instead of Mitchell Robinson, I wouldn't have any problems with that.
What do you think, or how do you think this season's going to end? Where do you
round two ceiling?
So same as last year.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting, man. If they end up as the three, Miami gets the six, and that's your first round matchup, Miami New York, a rematch of last year. I don't think the Heat are as good, but we say that every single year, and then they somehow end up in the conference finals or the NBA finals. That'll be a fascinating matchup, but I don't think Orlando, Indiana, or who's the other team. It'll be Orlando or Cleveland. Indiana can beat them. No, they can't play Cleveland.
They can't play Cleveland. It's, yeah.
I mean, I guess they can if they get to four. If Orlando gets hot and the Knicks and Cleveland stumble into the 4-5 matchup, they can play each other. But it looks like it's going to be Knicks Magic or Knicks Pacers or Heat in the first round. And I think that of those three teams, the one I fear most would be Miami.
Really quickly on the Nick section of Knicks fans that think the two seed's going to happen. I'm not going to put anything past this time of year because there's a bunch of teams that should be in Cabo right now that'll win a game or two. But Milwaukee's going to need a significant stumble against a lot of lottery teams for the Knicks to be able to jump that.
And I think they play the Bucks in
they do.
Like 2 weeks from now. And so Milwaukee has the tiebreaker already. And mm-hmm. The Knicks have to overcome that. So, yeah, I think Milwaukee's going to be the 2-seed.
The one team I wouldn't want to face if I was the Knicks is Orlando. Because I don't think Orlando's afraid of the Garden. And they are big. They're huge. And I just don't think in a 7-game series – the Knicks have enough to deal with that.
Yeah, but so now this is where I can use something you said earlier against you. Like, so what was your reason for not believing in, like, Deuce McBride and Hartenstein?
All right, they haven't been asked to do it.
In the playoffs, right? So, I mean, the Magic, this would be their first playoff appearance. Banchero is 21, hasn't played in a postseason game since he was in Duke. So, I mean, using that logic, then, yes, we haven't seen him do it before. So, I can't sit here and assert, yeah, or Orlando is going to, because of their length, just dominate the Knicks. No, the Magic haven't been here. They're babies. And the Knicks have more playoff experience than them.
I get it, but I could totally see a situation where it's tied 2-2 and Knicks fans are going, well, wait a minute. We're supposed to be better than this team. How is this series tied? How are we going down to Miami with a chance to be down in the series? I could totally see that. Cleveland, that's a walk in the park. It's not even a discussion. Indiana's going to be interesting. Halliburton in the Garden in the playoffs when he should have been the guy that you took over Obi, and he should be one of the guys that you have. And sort of that, you know, nobody believed in me. All the Knicks fans hate him because he took Jalen Brunson's All-Star spot a year ago. That's going to be an interesting series just from, can Halliburton be a guy? Plus the Obi factor, where every Knicks fan was throwing their heads, their arms over their head saying, what the hell are we doing? We love Obi. And now he's going to come back and they're going to boo him to Kingdom Come. That's going to be very fun for me as an NBA fan to watch. But again, if I'm the Knicks, the last team I want to see, and it's weird for me saying this because you're right, they have not been asked to do this in the postseason yet, is Orlando.
Yeah, I think that answer is Miami, just because we've seen it happen. I mean, we literally just saw it happen last year, and the Strus and Gabe Vincent departures I think are huge, but
the Knicks want that to happen.
Yeah, I don't know that, like, as a Knicks fan.
No.
Like, you're salivating at the thought of playing Miami. I just don't know that.
But this team, I think, this group of guys who lost to that Miami squad, I think they personally believe that they are up to par with them and want that revenge. So I don't think this Knicks team fears them, and I would be okay with that if I was a Knicks fan. Last question, and this will drive a lot of Knicks fans crazy. When do you think the Tibbs extension is going to happen, if it does?
Oh, it's going to happen. I mean, this, like, you could make the case, I guess, Oklahoma City, Mark Daniel, is number one. He's the coach of the year. But the most impressive coaching performance this year is a Tom Thibodeau. You could go with Finch in Minnesota. If they end up getting a one or the two seed, you know, but Tom Thibodeau has to be right up there. Like, Oklahoma City, because of the job, you know, Mark's done there.
Yes.
With the youngest team in basketball, if they get the one seed, I mean, you know, Chet's in his rookie, his quote-unquote rookie year. SGA's become a burgeoning star. But that, the youth of that team, Jalen Williams, I love. The youth of that team getting the one seed is in that conference is incredible. But Tom, with all the injuries, they're the three seed right now. They had, you know, Brunson hurt for a while. Randle's missed half the season. Robinson's missed half the season. OG, you know, dealing with the departures of RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickly and Quentin Grimes. Like, those three guys are supposed to be a part of your rotation. I think that is, regardless of what happens in the playoffs, he's going to get extended.
He probably finishes on the podium in terms of Coach of the Year. You could make the argument with Joe Mazzulla because they have the best record.
No, but, I mean, they're wrong. They've got nothing but talent on that roster.
But he was the biggest question mark for that team because, I mean, there was people in Boston that wanted him fired for his coaching job last year.
He's not going to be the Coach of the Year. I mean, they
he'll get votes.
Yeah, but they didn't, like, significantly outperform expectations. You felt like they were one of the two best teams in the conference, and they ended up being the best team in the conference. So, whereas the Knicks, like, they overcame so much more to get to the three seed.
I get it, but it's the same conversation as MVP. Best player on the best team is going to get votes. Whether he deserves it or not,
Man, Mike Tatum's going to get votes.
Right,
but he's
going to get MVP votes. What, has he really been the best player this year?
No.
But he's going to get votes. And it's the same thing with Mazzulla. So I could see Tibbs finishing top three, but it wouldn't surprise me that he finishes fourth. I know he's going to get an extension. And any Knicks fan that says, we don't want Tibbs, I will ask you this question because I've asked a ton of Knicks fans that have called all the shows. I've asked them the same question. Who do you want to replace? Who's good enough to get you over the hump to replace Tibbs that's available? Just like the Jalen Brunson conversation, there's not a coach in the NBA or on this planet that will get this team to a better situation than Tibbs has got this team right now.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that.
One last thing. Do you think that, let's say they get bounced in round two by Boston, do you think that the extension is going to happen this summer, or they're going to leave him as a lame duck to coach out the year?
Nah, regardless of what happens, he's getting extended this summer.
See, I want to agree with you. I just don't know if they get embarrassed by a Boston team. I'm not saying swept, but let's say it goes five, the gentlemen sweep, and they get run out of the gym by this Boston team. There is not a Knicks fan, even the biggest Tibbs backer, would not want to have that PR hit of, hey, let's give Tibbs three more years on top of this.
Yeah, but you can understand getting trounced by Boston. They are, like, pacing to be the 2017 Warriors, and the Knicks are dealing with injuries. So that's not something that, to me, leads you to not give him an extension. He's proven he deserves the extension. So I think it's going to happen regardless.
I believe there's going to be a conversation between Knicks brass and Tibbs that's going to come down the pipe, but I think it's going to happen next All-Star break is when I think it's going to actually get finalized. He's going to have an extension. There's no way they're going to let him walk into the summer in 25 without a contract. I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Ty, thank you so much for coming on, man. Tell the people what you got going on. I believe you're on. I know when you're on next, but tell the people when you're on 98.7 next.
On Sunday, Easter Sunday, 3 to 6:30. Looking forward to it. We'll be talking about the Yankees, get into some basketball as well, hit some football. So I'm excited, man. Talk to y'all on Easter Sunday.
I hope the Jets do well in the draft. That's a team I'm done talking about just because of all the nonsense that's been going on this offseason. Now we got our owner fighting our coach, or the fact that anybody has to send out a tweet that something like that did not occur at the league meetings is ridiculous.
The reporters admitted she got it wrong from the NFL Network. Colleen, whatever her last name is, she admitted she got it wrong.
But so the fact that that's a story, it just like pile it's that on the deal. Crap Sunday that is this 2024 offseason.
It's not a big deal.
Okay, and Rodgers getting a potential VP nomination is also not. It's ridiculous. This team is. Ugh.
Yeah.
I'll be listening, man. Have a great show on Sunday, and I'll talk to you soon. All right, bro. All
right, thanks, bro. Have a good one, man.
On this side of the coin, not the fake, Jay Leo on Twitter, jdatasports.blogspot.com, and of course this podcast. If you've reached this point, please like, subscribe, share this podcast to anybody who you seem fit. If you're new to the show, please download the show. It means more to the show. Then you know, first off, huge thanks to Ty Butler for coming on. It's always a pleasure to talk NBA with that guy. So, Ty, thank you again for coming on, man. In terms of the blog, I've got a new piece out previewing the MLB season for 2024. My predictions, who I think will win all of the divisions, the wild cards, a World Series prediction as well. Take a look at that. Again, jdatasports.blogspot.com. JoeLeo67 on Threads as well. I hope you have a fantastic weekend. If you are celebrating Easter, I hope you have a fantastic Easter with the family. In terms of the pod next week, gotta talk the NFL over-unders at some point next week. And of course, it's that time of year. More baseball and a little bit, probably on Monday or Tuesday, a little bit of the NCAA tournament from this weekend because, if your bracket wasn't busted from the first weekend, it sure is now after the Alabama win over North Carolina last night. And I'm sure that's not going to be the only upsets this weekend. So be on the lookout for that. But again, hope you have a fantastic weekend. Hope you're happy. Hope you're healthy. Hope you spend some time with the family. And from the sweet words of Semisonic, it's closing time. You don't got to go home, but you can't stay here. Juan Soto is a New York Yankee. Let's go, baby. Peace.